You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Drought, wildfires, mudslides. At this point, there's no doubt that climate change is causing catastrophes. A report released earlier this month by the United Nations made the problem quite clear. Now, I know what you're thinking. It's easy to bury your head in the sand when hearing news like that. But here's a way that you can make a difference. Stop burying your food scraps.
The single easiest thing that we can do to fight climate change is remove organics from landfills.
That's Rachel Wagner, the director of Cal Recycle. She says that banana peel rotting in your local landfill is heating up the planet. And changing what you do and don't throw in a landfill is about to get easier thanks to a state law. Over the next 3 years, your city will have to provide you a way to compost your food scraps. KCRW reporter and producer Catherine Barnes has been looking into all of this, and she's with us right now. Hey, Catherine.
Hey, Steve.
So let's start with the problem. Describe this connection between landfills and greenhouse gases.
Right. So when you put something into a landfill, you bury it. And when there's no oxygen getting to it, certain types of bacteria flourish where there's no oxygen. And that bacteria produces methane. Here's Rachel Wagner again.
That banana peel breaks down to create methane. And methane is 84 times more potent than carbon.
Now, landfills try really hard to capture that methane before it heads out into our atmosphere, but some do a better job than others, and it's never, ever perfect. And because of that, organics in our landfills are a major contributor to our state's carbon emissions. So in 2016, Governor Jerry Brown signed into law a bill that says by 2025, we need to reduce the amount of organic waste going into our landfills by 75%. And we'll get to this later, Steve, but we have a long ways to go.
But again, the baseline is the year 2014. Aren't we already diverting organics, Catherine? I mean, I hear about local composting groups and green bins and all kinds of stuff like that. Is that what's going on?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, a lot of places already do a pretty good job when it comes to like green waste programs, you know, throwing your dry leaves or your plants into your green waste bin and maybe turning that into mulch. There's also different drop-off programs where you can drop off your food scraps to services like LA Compost, and they'll take your food and they'll turn it into compost. But those are such small beans when you look at the big picture, and a lot of them have already hit capacity. We have a reporter, Kaylee Wells, who actually did a story on this. Just Google KCRW compost, and you'll find out why it's so hard to compost in LA. So the bottom line is we need to do this on a large municipal scale and get everyone involved if we're going to make real progress, not just the hippy-dippy, crunchy granola kind of people.
Yeah, I'm not one of those crunchy granola people. I mean, my eggshells still go to the landfill, unfortunately. I wonder, though, I mean, what does it mean for people like me, Catherine? Will I get a new bin to start chucking my food scraps into?
No, most likely you won't, Steve. Don't worry. It won't be too much of a hard lift for you. You'll probably keep your three-bin system, your green bin, your blue bin, and your black or brown landfill bin. It really depends on where you live and what the rules in your city will become. Some cities may ask you to start putting your food scraps in your green bin along with your yard waste. That's what San Francisco does. Santa Monica also does that. But others may ask you to keep throwing your food scraps in the landfill bin. They'll just separate it out further down the line before it hits the landfill at what are called materials recovery facilities. So don't worry, Steve. This isn't going to take hours of your time.
Well, I mean, and again, a lot of folks, Catherine, have a lot of things going on. And,
right.
And you know, then what? Where will it go instead of the landfill? Does it wind up in some, you know, place where it's becoming compost?
Yeah, so cities and counties are trying to figure that out right now. And there are basically three main ways to compost this stuff that they have to choose from.
All right.
The three ways are aerobic digestion, anaerobic digestion, and co-digestion. Let's start with aerobic digestion, since it's probably what you're most familiar with. It's composting using oxygen. It's what those neighborhood composting groups like LA Compost are doing, but at a much larger scale. So you take a pile of food scraps, you mix in some dirt, some leaves, some horse manure maybe. You keep mixing it and churning it, getting the air in there. You spread it out to dry, and then you have compost that will work on a garden. This is the method that Santa Monica uses. But actually, it's kind of funny. They don't compost it anywhere near Santa Monica. They actually put your food scraps in a truck. They drive it up to a facility in Taft, California to get composted.
Wow. Taft, California. I mean, that's like 100 miles away.
Yeah, there just aren't really any facilities to bring this to in LA. It's kind of NIMBYism at play.
Yeah, certainly not in the backyard of Santa Monica. So, all right, what's the next way, Catherine?
So the second main way that you're hearing about more and more is called anaerobic digestion. And that's basically the same exact thing as aerobic digestion, but without oxygen. Up in Santa Barbara, they just finished building a facility like this, and I took a tour earlier this month. It's on the same site as their landfill, and it looks like a huge warehouse with a dozen airtight bunkers inside. The bunkers look like these big walk-in freezers, and that's where organic waste is left for about a month while bacteria is added to break it all down. Carlisle Johnson is the project leader. I'll let him describe what happens next.
And when it comes out, it's going to come out of this conveyor belt here and splat onto that ground, and it's going to have the consistency of vomit. It's going to be really gross. It's going to be really wet.
All right, Catherine, you lost me on vomit.
Wet, gross, vomit, yum.
Yeah.
And so that whole sludgy stuff is mixed with green waste. It dries out similarly to the other process. And then that compost can be used, maybe not on your garden, but on places like golf courses, rangeland, orchards, things like that.
All right. So we have aerobic, anaerobic, without the oxygen. What was the third thing again?
So this one might be kind of the grossest. It's called co-digestion, and it's like what I just described, but the facility breaks down both organic waste and wastewater. The city of LA actually is starting to send their food scraps to one of these plants in the Inland Empire. And the company who runs it, Anaergia, says it's the largest food waste diversion and energy recovery facility in North America.
So as the name implies, it's producing renewable energy as it's actually composting waste?
Right. It's pretty amazing. Yeah. Anaerobic digesters and co-digesters produce methane just like landfills do, since this stuff is breaking down without oxygen. But because it's closed off in these bunkers, all the methane is captured and then can be used to power the facility itself, and it can be added to the grid. So at the end of the day, we're still releasing CO2, but it's better than methane.
This all sounds great, Catherine, but it also sounds very, very expensive. Who's paying for all of this?
Well, Steve, do you have a mirror handy? Just look at it. It's going to be you and me and all the other taxpayers in California. I live in Santa Barbara, and my county, as I just mentioned, spent $135 million on that sorting and digesting facility that I toured. So I'll see that reflected in my trash bill over the next few years. And you live in LA, which has not done a great job of composting its food scraps so far. Kobe Sky from LA County Public Works wants to change that as early as next year, but says they need more places to do it.
We know that we need a lot more capacity, about a dozen facilities at a commercial scale, to manage the amount of material that we expect to start separating as early as next year.
So he says a dozen facilities in LA. You have one that costs, you know, north of $100 million. We're talking a lot of money, like even into the billions.
Yeah. Landfills have been the cheap way to deal with waste for decades, and things are only going to get pricier from now on.
You know, Catherine, I mean, as we're talking about this, I keep asking myself, you know, I wonder if this is happening in other places across the country. Is it?
Yeah, it is. California was the first state to create this mandate, as I said, in 2016. But since then, at least seven other states have adopted similar laws. So it's happening in other parts of the country, mainly in the Northeast and the Mid-Atlantic. And municipal composting efforts in other parts of the world, like Europe, are far more advanced than ours. For example, Copenhagen stopped sending organic waste to landfills nearly altogether back in 1990.
So it's not like we're reinventing the wheel. I mean, we can take inspiration from those other places as well. How likely is it that here at home, we'll really hit this 75% goal by the year 2025? That's just a few years away.
Yeah, it's a great target to aspire to, but it's not going to be easy to actually hit this goal. You know how we should have been reducing the amount of organic waste in our landfills ever since this bill passed in 2016? Well, we haven't. We've actually gone up. Here's Rachel Wagner from CalRecycle again.
In 2018, we were disposing of 24 million tons of organic material, and the baseline was 23 million tons. So we are in need of a lot of progress.
But Rachel is very optimistic, I'll give her that. She says that number will go down as more jurisdictions adopt and follow through on these programs. And the state does have the power to enforce this law with fines and penalties starting next year.
So yeah, Catherine, I mean, we have a long way to go, obviously. Ultimately, we should feel good, right? That the money and the changes will be worth it in the end, since we won't be burying as much of that waste, the organics waste, in landfills.
Yes. At the end of the day, composting is way better than burying our food. Steve, we're not squirrels, right?
No, we're not squirrels. We should not bury our food. We need to compost them in the future. And that's what the future holds. Catherine Barnes, KCRW reporter and producer. Catherine, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
So composting food is good for the environment in a bunch of ways. How about composting yourself? I know this is a bit of a macabre subject, but it's an important one. Right now, there are basically only two legal ways to dispose of your body once you're done with it, or it's done with you: burial and cremation. Washington State, Colorado, and Oregon have approved a third way, what's being called natural organic reduction, basically composting human remains, the human body left to disintegrate into the soil. A bill to legalize that method in California has been making its way through the legislature. Assemblymember Christina Garcia from Bell Gardens authored the bill, and she's here now. Assemblywoman, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me and for the opportunity to talk about this important issue.
Yeah, it is an important one. I guess the first question is, what's the need for this? I mean, what's wrong with either burial or cremation?
Well, let me say this. Whatever choice you choose for yourself is right. This is another option, but when we do the cremation, we have a lot of CO2 that gets emitted into the air. And so as we've seen climate change affect us with our weather patterns, we need to try everything we can to find, you know, things that are more environmentally friendly. And so this is an option that reduces those emissions. When we talk about burial, we also have methane emissions that affect climate change. And we also have different chemicals that leach into the ground as well. And so this is something that's a little bit safer. We saw during the pandemic here in Southern California that our air district had to suspend the rules that we have on cremation. We have limitations on that. And so I think it just, you know, exacerbated the situation and reminded us that we need to move forward with additional options that are going to be better for the environment. We don't have any time to waste.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, I want to get into what's involved in all of this, but you mentioned that there are chemicals that leach into the soil. Is there an issue with cleanliness or disease or contamination of the soil or even the groundwater below it in situations like this where there isn't a casket, there isn't a tomb?
So these are all important questions. And just like we regulate how we do cremations, this is, would also be regulated by the Bureau. And so the body gets put into a big urn of sorts, let's say, with natural wood chips and so forth. And in about 30 days, it gets decomposed. It decomposes things like bones and teeth. And you might have, you know, a titanium piece in your body. So that wouldn't decompose just like we do with cremation, and that would be recycled. But in all honesty, the science tells us that this is fine, that it's safe, and that all those diseases through the process and bacteria and so forth die, and we don't have any of that contamination going into the soil at the end.
So let's get into what is involved. What kinds of things happen in a situation like this where you're essentially composting the human body?
So right now there's a company called Recompose, and you know, they could give you more details. But basically, a body is put into an urn of sorts with wood chips and other natural items, and it decomposes over about 30 days. And at the end, you are left with about 2 buckets of soil that could be used just like any other soil in your garden to plant a tree out there. And so not only are we reducing the amount of CO2 out there, but these trees and these natural ways also absorb CO2. And so I think there's benefits on the front end, on the back end of moving in this direction.
So this is kind of like cremation?
I think it's kind of like cremation, because at the end of the day, right, you get a box of ashes, and as a family, you decide how best to use it and how best to honor your loved ones. I think here you end up with soil, and again, you have the same question of like how best to honor your family member and how to use that. And so some people might decide they want to plant a garden. In some places, they're starting to develop cemeteries that are more like forests and planting trees there. And so when you go visit your loved one, you're going to visit them at a tree site instead of with a little bit of shade out there. And so I think there's a lot of similarities to both either cremation or we want a more traditional burial service out there. And I think something that's just a little more natural. So it just creates another option, another way for us to think about it.
Your bill has been getting bipartisan support so far, but it's been opposed by the Catholic Church. Is that correct?
That's correct.
What is the Catholic Church saying in this situation?
No, I think just like, we remember the history when we started to use cremation, the Catholic Church opposed that and felt that it was not the right way to honor a family member. And so we have similar opposition now to this process. I think what I grew up in a Catholic household, we've had the discussion at home with my parents. And what I would say, my job is to ensure that I protect your right to practice your religion. And if this isn't for you, you don't need to partake in this, and you could go ahead and take advantage of the other options. But I also need to ensure that I'm not imposing my religion on other individuals, and they're able to practice their belief system however they want. And I provide as many options as possible out there. And so I do think this is a way to honor your loved ones in a respectful manner for myself. I've always wanted to be a tree. I've always thought about, you know, where do I want my family to visit? What's the experience I want them to have with me? And so I would like them to have an experience where we're in nature, where there's trees out there and a little bit of shade and have that experience with me, you know, in my afterlife.
So even as a Catholic yourself, you disagree with the church that this is something that you would like to partake in, and maybe the church shouldn't have a say in this.
You know, I disagree with the church, but I feel I feel that it's okay. We could have differences of opinions, but we could respect that. And so if this isn't for you, you don't need to take advantage of it. But I shouldn't impose my beliefs on or our beliefs on other people who might want to take advantage of this, who are excited about something that's a little more environmentally friendly, and that's a priority for them.
What about cemeteries and funeral homes? They could lose some business if this bill becomes law. I mean, have you been hearing anything from the funeral industry?
Yeah, they're actually engaged. They're not in opposition. I think at the end of the day, part of honoring a loved one, just like with cremation, is, you know, how do maybe they help with the ceremony and the funeral services that are there. So I don't think that this would take away from that. I think for the cemeteries, like I told you, some cemeteries are starting to plant trees for loved ones. And so they're still, you know, providing that space for people to come to and see their loved ones. But instead of a headstone, maybe there's a tree there. And so I don't think that this has to be in competition with the system that we already have, but I think it's complementary instead.
Christina Garcia, who represents District 58 in the California State Assembly, covers parts of Southeast LA, Downey, Bell Gardens. Assemblywoman, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
It's KCRW's Greater LA. Hey there. Steve Chiatakis here, now for another stop in nature, this time to the beach in the county of Orange. Capistrano Beach, or Capo Beach as it's known to locals, was once a vibrant stretch of coastline with volleyball courts, a basketball court, fire rings. But that coastline and sand have been suffering in recent years because of erosion from strong storms. Well, now the California Coastal Commission is looking over nature-based plans to preserve it. Nature-based. LA Times columnist Gustavo Arellano is here every week with the Orange County Line, and he joins us right now. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
Tell us about a few of these nature-based solutions. What's that mean?
It's actually based off, well, not based off of, but my colleague, Rosanna Shaw, she wrote about this, how all along the California coast, what the Coastal Commission and other, you know, environmental activists are increasingly advocating for is trying to bring back what, how the coast looked like. So sand dunes, you get, you know, a little, some vegetation there, the natural vegetation there. All, that's what used to keep the sand there on the beach. When you just have sand there, of course, the coast is going to take it away, rather, the waves are going to take it away slowly but surely. So the thinking is, if we restore those coastal dunes and how California coast, the how California beaches used to look, then we'll have beaches for a far longer time than just say, hey, let's develop on it and let Mother Nature just chip away at it.
And they think that's going to prevent future erosion. It's just how nature wanted it.
You know, it's basically like the little Dutch boy putting his finger against the dike. It'll be a temporary solution, but Mother Nature always wins. So, hey, at least it's a better solution than what we have right now, which is just erosion after erosion after erosion.
Yeah, there's and we've seen the pictures of flooding down there, and, you know, right near the beach on the roads and the bike paths. There's not a lot of sandy beach left because, I mean, since it was put there at Capo Beach many years back. So part of this issue down there is the lack of actual sand, right?
Yeah, it's technically a fake beach. So Capistrano Beach, what we have today, was really birthed in the 1960s and 50s when what's now Dana Point Harbor was dredged up, where a big barrier there was dredged up, and then all the sand and silt was put there on Capistrano Beach. So, you know, there was, before that was a far smaller coastline. So in some ways, this erosion is actually returning Capo Beach to what it was. But of course, no one remembers that. Everyone remembers this wonderful, beautiful little beach down there. And people want that, you know, people want it to remain as long as they're alive. In the future, well, it'll be gone. But for the meanwhile, they want to do anything possible to keep it.
I mean, what is it about this beach? What's so special about this stretch of beach to folks in that area in Capistrano?
Well, all beaches are sacred, first and foremost. Secondly, this is a cute little beach. It's really small, only about 1,500 feet. It's isolated, relatively speaking, from the other beaches in Orange County. And we know in Orange County, before the coronavirus pandemic, of course, you had millions of tourists coming into California, into Orange County, a lot of them going to the beach. But it's kind of hard to drive there. You basically have to get into Dana Point, so travel far, far, far south on the 5 freeway, almost to San Diego. And then from there, you have to go up PCH. You basically have to know where this beach is, and this is a beach where you could actually park almost right there on the sand, see the sunset, really a working man's beach, but you have to know how to get there.
What about, I mean, so we're talking about this and what people remember about this stretch of beach, but what we're talking about today, Gustavo, are the short-term fixes so the folks could come and enjoy. Are there any plans for the long term? I mean, you said that it's a fix for now. What do you do later? I mean, is it just like letting nature take its course?
I mean, the real question is, and this is this, by the way, this is just a small glimpse into the future of the California coast, period, is what's called managed retreat. This idea that we're not going to be able to have houses there. We're not going to be able to have beaches there if this continues. So my colleague, Ann Doe, in 2018, she actually wrote about the erosion of Capistrano Beach. I think it was in the winter of 2018 when she did that story. And she made mention of a basketball court that was still there and people were still able to play. It doesn't exist anymore. They had to take it out. This is just in 3 years. So this is happening. So what the County of Orange is proposing to the Coastal Commission, which is going to be, the last arbiter on anything involving the coast, is trying to set up these cinder block barriers and all, even something as simple as bags filled with sand and concrete to be able to keep those waves away, like temporary blocks. But it's not, you know, it's temporary. At most, maybe you get 10 to 20 years if this continues. So at that point, well, either you pray that nothing happens or you just build a bunch of desalination plants and bring down the ocean levels in the world, then that's obviously not going to happen.
Well, I know the commission is expected to vote on a finalized plan sometime by the end of the year. Do you know which one will eventually be implemented?
The Coastal Commission can, you know, it gets it gets a lot of controversy for supposedly being more on the side of the coast than it is on the side of the people. But at the same time, especially with this Coastal Commission, they want the coast to be as accessible to the public as possible. So I think they're not going to do a full managed retreat. They're going to try to save what's left of Capistrano Beach. But this is something that's going to be continuing for the decades to come. So there needs to be a conversation overall in all of California, because right now it's Capo Beach. Later on, it's Laguna Beach. Later on, it's Dockweiler Beach. The water's coming, and we can't do anything about it.
Yeah. Well, as you say, short-term and then long-term, and that's what we're dealing with right now. Gustavo Arellano, columnist with the LA Times, here, of course, every week with KCRW's Orange County Line. Gustavo, as always, thanks.
Gracias.
That's all the time we have for today. Tomorrow, the kids are back in school. Maybe they're all right. But what about the teachers? Are they all right? That story tomorrow on GLA. Subscribe to the podcast here and see all of our stories online anytime at kcrw.com/greaterLA. While you're there, tell us how you're doing. And if you have a story idea or maybe a question, you can do that too at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Sue Margulies, Phil Richards, Mario Saavedra, Amy Ta, Mike Vogel, and Christian Bordahl all had hands and ears on tonight's show. I'm Steve Giotakis. Thanks for your ears and attention this evening. Have yourself a great night.